Well, howdy. Bet you were waiting for the intro music, weren't you? So am I. So am I. This is The Horn, and yes, it is the third day of April 2013. The Horn is available, as you know, most easily by going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking Listen Live. However, you can use smartphone apps, things like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio. I'm a big fan of TuneIn myself. There are other sites like dar.fm and streama.com, and we're listed on Roku devices, you know, that kind of thing. Podcast address is at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And, of course, you can always get the podcast at iTunes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. The cold, dry opening is just downright weird, so maybe an explanation is in order. The explanation is, last night, after getting done with Dr. Bill, the production machine here, about which I have complained for a very long time now, finally decided to become so recalcitrant that it begged for it. Well, I knew it was, what it boiled down to is, I know I'm going on the road again. I'll be in D.C. next week, maybe the week after that, and the week after that, broadcasting live from there. So I did not want to leave this production PC in its less than salutary state for Agnes to have to deal with. And then, of course, the server locked up. So between those two things, there was no show last night. You see what I mean? With no show, I spent the remainder of the night, some of which was in consultation with John Fox. Thank you, John. John holds the key, quite often holds the keys to my sanity. But in consultation with John, did what seemed to be the only realistically possible thing to do. Once Ben Birch had gotten the servers rebooted so that I could actually reach them, well, by that time we were deeply into the process of loading Windows 8 onto this machine and saving data so we could transfer it over and things like that. All the data didn't get saved. How do you like that? Well, so that's where we find ourselves this evening. I'll have to go back, maybe have John send me the intros and stuff. Ah, goodness me. But we now have Windows 8 running. I tweeted earlier in the day, but for those of you who don't follow Twitter or Facebook, my experience with Windows 8 in the last 21 hours has, well, it convinced me to go back and do a reread of at least part of Dante's Inferno. I have come to the conclusion that everybody gets leveled up in hell. Dante says that the ninth circle of hell is reserved, and that's ice, isn't it? The ninth circle of hell is reserved for Judas and the other betrayers. I am pleased to announce that Judas and the other betrayers have just moved up to level 8. Whoever was in 8 is in 7. And ultimately, that means that whoever was in the first level of hell probably just got bumped into purgatory or maybe even made it into paradise. Things work out that way. Because the ninth circle of hell is now reserved for Bill Gates and everyone who had a hand in the creation of Windows 8. Honest to Pete. If you don't already have it, you don't want it. It's kind of, Windows 8 is kind of like the clap that way. Uh, I mean, when it finally started up and loaded and installed and everything, well, dang, that's pretty. No. Windows 8. Do you remember, those of you of a certain age, remember when Windows 95 first came out and all your friends who were Mac users said, well, darn, that looks like they're just trying to make a Windows platform that behaves like an Apple platform. Which they did. Until they finally came around to creating Windows XP, which worked entirely too well to be tolerable on the commercial market. So then we got Windows Vista. Windows Vista was a complete disaster, so we got Windows 7, which makes no numerical sense, but we're talking about Microsoft after all. And with Windows 7 out there plugging away, that would never do. And so the eternally tinkering geniuses, or, I don't know, little demon minions of hell who work at Microsoft, well, they decided they needed a completely new design. And the reason I mentioned back in the day when everybody said, you know, that looks awful, that reminds me of the Mac interface. Well, that's because they don't want to be, Microsoft doesn't want to be Mac anymore. Now they want to be Android. Which is bad enough on a little tablet, but annoying as all be Jesus, it turns out, on a computer. And the consensus seems to be rolling in that, yes, I'm not kidding you. Let's see, Blue Cowgirl via Twitter noting, Win 8 blows. I've been fighting it for almost a year on my newbie. Sucks bad. Ben Birch, who is a real live not kidding genius, merely remarked, W8. You. And see, for those of you, how do I begin to explain this? There was no possibility of reloading XP. Windows 7 was $200. Windows 8 was $119. And in light of the fact that this was an unplanned, unbudgeted expense, I had a choice. I could load Windows 8 last night and hopefully be on the air by this afternoon, or I could hope that $200 would come rolling in to meet an unplanned expense when we had, by missing last night, already gotten $150 behind in fundraising, which we are. You see the problem? Yeah. How do I hate Windows 8? Let me count the ways. The interface that you see, and I tell you this, those of you who have it know what I'm talking about. Those who don't, I hope this is only a cautionary tale, a warning, if you will. The geniuses, those engineers who Marty notes went to Microsoft on a good old H-1B visa. Yeah. What you see is being called the Metro interface. Well, my. You know how I've always got this reference to things in ancient history thing going on? And yeah, I know it's prayer meeting Wednesday, but we don't have the Minister of Music here. And I thought you might at least like to know why I wasn't here last night. But something always reminds me of something in ancient history, and I got to thinking as I was fiddling around with this godforsaken piece of garbage that I am now stuck with, we are stuck with, that Agnes will have to negotiate and traverse in her own private hell once I'm gone from here and back in D.C. I expect phone calls that involve a lot of screaming and swearing. Oh, sure, Agnes comes off as all sweetness and light in Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, but you haven't seen her after she's been mud wrestling Hal. This is the operating system from 2001: A Space Odyssey. Because the default position of Windows 8 is, I'm sorry, I can't do that. It's like being a supplicant to some ancient esoteric religion in which holding up the left hand will get you stoned to death, but holding up the right will... Asking it shall be given unto you. How do you do? Thank you, Jeremy. But it is. Nothing makes sense. You want to know how bad it got? Since this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, I can use this word. This is how bad it got. I started fooling around with Windows 8 early this morning, and by early I mean, 4 a.m., at which point I typed into Bing, where is the goddamn start button? Which was also followed by, where is the effing control panel? This is just meanness. Pure corporate meanness. Yeah, so apparently I'm in good company with many of you. Jim was right out of the blocks. Told you so. Had it and got rid of it. Ugh. Marty noting, as someone learning to support Windows 8 as a computer resource specialist, you have my sympathy. I'll send you good rum. At this point, I think rum may not be enough, Marty. I think we're talking Thorazine dart in the neck. And Marty notes that as to my relegating Bill Gates and those Microsoft engineers to the ninth level of hell. No, Bob, Steve Ballmer before Bill Gates, and not the ninth level of hell, just the special level of hell, the one reserved for child molesters and people who talk at the theater. No, I want these guys under them. Ron and Raleigh noting, Windows 8, are you insane, man? Why in the world did you think this upgrade was the right thing to do? Windows 8's okay if you want your PC to work like a phone. I'm sticking with XP. I'd love to have stuck with XP. It was not an option. Just wasn't. Then Jeremy noting from Vermont, turn off the swipe light. Swipe right to left for apps and windows. That'll solve all your problems. Swear to God, Bob, not as bad as once you're used to it. But I got to figure out how to do that. Then David, the angry architect, writing from Australia. Windows 8? No! And the O's go on forever. We tested it here in the office. Never again do I even want to look at it. No, 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 no! Yes. No, this is not a touchscreen system, although I did try to put my fist through the monitor a couple of times earlier today. The biggest problem I've run across so far is, my biggest problem because it's the thing we deal with most, is how it handles audio. See, that was the lovely thing about Windows XP, it handled audio in a straightforward and completely rational fashion. Here's your mixer. You want input? You want output? Pick one. It's okay. Makes no difference. Not this. Oh, no. Not this. Not to get into too much inside baseball. See, sometimes this show is therapy for me, not just you. Sometimes I have to just, because Agnes was back here during the worst part of the screaming. And she said, Bob, you got to get on the air tonight. I said, yeah, but it's prayer meeting. She says, no, no, that's okay. Just talk it out, Bob. Talk it out. There's a, in answer to the question, where's my start button, I learned all about the Charms Bar. Really, the Charms Bar. As if, to confirm my suspicion, this is not actually an operating system. It's something that happens by virtue of some sort of arcane and esoteric incantation recitation that nobody's clued me in on. A lot of it involves wandering around on the screen with your mouse. And there are these things called tiles, and where once before, you know, once upon a time, boys and girls, there were things called computer programs, and one loaded one's computer programs onto one's computer and ran the computer programs from one's computers. Gone are the days. Pick a person and, right. Now, they're apps. What was once my Google Earth program is now a Google Earth app. What was once my Skype program is now a Skype app. And I need, because of the way we operate here, I need for my Skype app to work inside the desktop environment. So far, no such luck. Hell, I was 45 minutes trying to find the, well, just sort of wandering aimlessly around the desktop, hoping the Charms Bar for Skype would appear. Finally, it did, and I got to check in on the audio settings for Skype, which took some damn finding. Dr. John noting, Charms Bar? If something's really charming, it doesn't need to be so named, right? Right. And if it is so named, well, it's kind of like calling a nudie bar... where you can catch things that make it hurt when you pee just by grabbing the doorknob, a gentleman's club. Yes. Windows 8 has charms the way that strip clubs are for gentlemen. And I mean exactly like that. Marty pointing out, by the way, for everyone who's hanging on desperately to XP, there's no level lower than the special level of hell. And also, XP's end of life comes later this year, I believe. This is... So I've been at this all day. Somewhere along the way, I tried to do a little show prep. But there are absolutely no guarantees as to whether any of it makes any sense or not. We could just as easily, assuming I can find a browser in here somewhere, haul up a copy of Jabberwocky and read it for the next 3 hours. The sad fact out of all of this is that our Skype access is disabled at this point in time. by the way, Marty jumping to Hal's defense earlier. Hal was designed properly. He was given conflicting instructions from the humans. You've read 2010, haven't you? Yes. So that's why the rest of the program may just be a little bit weird. All the malware and crapware and spyware and everything seems to be gone. And hopefully, since it had been quite a while since that copy of XP had been installed, which extended back to the beginnings of Ferg's adolescence, at which times he would sneak back here and go off to the really seedy, slimy, nasty parts of the Internet, whence some of these problems arose. Maybe this will remain stable for a while. Oh, okay. Marty with a correction. XP's end of life is 8/4/14. Yeah, that was another thing. I went to download Skype, you know, for free. Oh, I had to go to the Microsoft App Store. Honest to Pete, I think if Apple pooped and could see corn in it, they would be passing canned corn around Microsoft headquarters. Really. It's an app store. Marty noting, yes, there used to be programs, and they used to come on portable media, and you could load them as you wished. Now they have to be bought from an app store, and despite being an avid Mac user, I curse Steve Jobs for this one, and they are streamed to your computer. Bingo! Some how-tos coming in. Thank you very much, Ron. Robert in Australia with an observation. Tomorrow Never Dies is the subject line. From the James Bond film Tomorrow Never Dies, meeting of evil corporation, evil chairman speaks. Is the new operating system ready to launch? Yes, evil chairman. It launches tomorrow. It's full of bugs, so users will be paying through the nose for upgrades for years. Excellent. So that's where we are. Jay from Yuma and parts south pointing out, no, Bob, it's not corporate meanness. It's corporate profits first. Windows 8 is designed to work primarily with mobile devices, which is where 95% of new sales will be going forward. When Windows 7 runs its course, the serious desktop users will be moved to Windows Server. Oh, brother. Steve in Vermont writing, at 63, I've always used a Mac of some kind. When the healthcare facility I work at went to digital record keeping using Microsoft, one had to learn several steps, passwords, which change every 3 months. I look at it as a way of weeding people out. Your reference to Dante's Inferno rang a bell. Thanks, Steve. This from Philip. Subject line, the quest for help.
Hello, Microsoft Helpline. My name is Melissa Jo Slappenhog, authentic U.S. citizen. Very pleased am I to helping you. What is your question to me?
Well, Melissa Jo, my Windows 8 doesn't work a damn, and I need assistance.
Very pleased am I helping you to.
Sorry to interrupt, Melissa Jo, but I've already done everything on your flowchart, and here's the problem.
Well, Philip, before you go on, let us just try to everything again to make sure we understand the problem.
I understand the problem. Your product doesn't work.
Well, I am too sorry that you that way feel, but let us try again.
2.5 hours later, after the flowchart is exhausted.
I am too sorry, Mr. Philip. It seems that you may the technical expert we have on staff this day need. Would you like me to transfer you? He is available for only $75 a call, and I'm sure our wonderful technician Billy Bob can assist you. Please to have your credit card available.
Ah!
click.
And I don't know, this may be the first toaster of the night, Jay.
Also, Windows 8 is a bit like being a gay adolescent. I can assure you that it gets better.
And Jay, how old are you, and how long was it before you came to that conclusion?
Oh, God!
Thank you. Thank you very much, Cowgirl.
I can't back up to 7 without paying the money.
Oh, I get it. I got it. Now, anybody who wants to help on this, without being, well, and I'm not stupid. I've been fooling with stuff. When we started, I mean, okay, a little bit of Horn history here. When we started the Horn, we started with 2 PCs running XP. They were identical to one another. Within a year, one had fried. And at that point in time, Peter Godbold, to whom I will forever be indebted, jumped into the breach and said, and understand, when I got those first two, the idea of installing a pair of sound cards terrified me. Right? So, we got over that hump. Then Peter taught me to build computers, and I became quite adept at it. So, you know, I'm not one of these people who, you know, types with one finger and hits enter with the sense of trepidation that attends the beginning of a nuclear holocaust. I'm not that guy. But the problem I'm running across right now is, A, getting Skype onto the desktop and away from the godforsaken Metro interface. Every time you say Metro interface, you have to imagine a guy with hair growing on his head like, you know, like a lettuce bed, with his shirt, Kiana shirt, buttoned down halfway to his navel, and lots of chest hair and gold chains showing. And when he talks, he clocks with his teeth clenched. Metro interface. F me running. And I'll have you know that I went through all of this without the solace of so much as a beer. Thank you, by the way, to Sal for getting us started this evening. We are now, okay, this, okay, so that pops up that way. Thank you, Sparky.
Oh, Jesus, how do I get back to my desktop now?
Let's see, let's hit that. And there, okay. Bill from Cleveland observing, my so-called health aide stole all my XP discs. That sucketh. So anyway, the problem now is getting Skype onto the desktop and finding out if there's some way to make it look like Skype used to look when Skype freaking worked. And then to find out why Skype doesn't work now. Maybe a long time coming.
Thanks, Marty. I appreciate the sentiment. Marty says, I'll send you rum, but you can't have my Thorazine. I need my Thorazine.
I know the feeling.
So this is kind of where we find ourselves this evening, this prayer meeting Wednesday. We've got plenty, and, you know, here's the beautiful part. The phones work, and I will go to them presently after we have worked through a few things. But this being prayer meeting Wednesday,
this should be interesting. Thank you, Ron. How to make Windows 8 seem normal. Maybe we'll try that. Philip, under the heading Gun Control and Computers. Damn, Bob, if they take away our assault weapons, how will I shoot my computer rapidly multiple times to end my agony? I know. I found myself last night alternately screaming, or muttering, Newman, and screaming, Con! Yeah. Con was probably, you know, in the future, probably distantly related to Bill Gates or something. It was the Metro interface, James Kirk. The Metro interface. And I have installed it on every computer in Enterprise. Because I do not intend to kill you, James Kirk. I intend to see you suffer. Go ahead, James Kirk. Try to open a browser from the Metro interface. You see what it's done to my poor little head? Now, so I found this interesting starting place. I read Think Progress fairly often. And there's a lot of smart stuff that goes on there. There's a lot of good reporting. Like I've said before, they're better at straight-up reporting than they are at opinion, because their opinions are often a little bit too, all you cats, come this way. We've got the little friskies over here. So they've got this person who writes over there, and as far as I can tell, mostly she writes about television and pop culture and stuff. And so I saw this, and understand, when I talk about these things, I'm doing so because I'm assuming that there has been, to one degree or another, something on the order of 12 hours of progressive broadcasting of some form or another before this show ever aired, and that most of y'all, most of the Horn family, most of the Horn commune, being very well plugged into such things, already pretty much know the current events of the day. So I don't feel like unless it's just all over me, I don't feel a necessity to sort of go over every last jot and tittle of the happenings of the day. And on days like this, prayer meeting Wednesday, this kind of subject matter is appropriate, especially when it dovetails with another little bit of rampant insanity. Elisa Rosenberg writes over at Think Progress. And as far as I can tell, mostly she writes about pop culture and a lot of television, occasionally comic books. I mean that as no insult. So today, she's got a long digression on Game of Thrones. Now, thanks to David from Maine, who provided the first season on DVD to Agnes, and by extension to me, we've gotten to watch it, the first season. I guess we're in, what, season 3 now? I wouldn't know, because it's on HBO, and, well, yeah, ain't gonna be no HBO. We're lucky to get the 20 channels, including 6 electronic fundamentalism channels that we do get. But anyway, She's got this post called How Magic Works in Game of Thrones. And I am just scatterbrained enough that when I see something like this, I'll go, oh, stop, wait, let me read. How magic works. Okay. That'll be good. And so I start reading. And so she found this piece about Game of Thrones that she really liked in the London Review of Books. And she says, rather than asking you to believe in magic, along with characters who take its existence for granted, an apparent hurdle for some readers that I must confess I've always found to be in an inexplicable act of snobbery. Stop right there. Am I to understand that being put off? I mean, I love Lord of the Rings. I watched the Harry Potter movies with my kids. I drew the line at the Mormon vampire movies. I didn't want anything to do with them. But I'm not averse to that kind of thing. Marcus Bachman riding a lion through Narnia, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, what the hell does that sentence mean? Rather than asking you to believe in magic along with characters who take its existence for granted, an apparent hurdle for some readers that I must confess I've always found to be an inexplicable act of snobbery. Is it snobbery to just find stuff in which one cannot engage what Samuel Taylor Coleridge referred to as the willing suspension of disbelief? I find that statement to be an inexplicable act of snobbery. I have caught hell on occasion, for instance, for noting that I don't much care for opera nor musical theater because I don't know anybody who walks around breaking into song. I like my whiskey straight, no chaser, and I like my theater dialogue-y and not necessarily accompanied by somebody banging away at a piano. Music is music, theater is theater, and neither of the twain should meet. I understand I'm in a minority there, but it's just how I am. It's not snobbery, I just don't care for it. But according to Alyssa Rosenberg, it is an inexplicable act of snobbery if you don't want to buy into the magic of a universe of whatever. And that's not to say that in Game of Thrones I don't buy into it. I just don't like that statement. Because after all, Game of Thrones is on effing HBO. And being an allegedly progressive person writing about stuff on HBO, which in large part is not available to the 99%, or if it is available to the 99%, is available because they are sacrificing something somewhere else, that strikes me as the inexplicable act of snobbery. Now, this all kind of dovetailed together for me today because I picked up the phone. Hello? And it was the cable company that charges us for internet that often doesn't work, and phones whose calls get inexplicably, there's that word, dropped, and cable fundamentalism channels that we don't want ever watch and pay for nonetheless, they called to ask me today whether or not I would, why don't I have HBO? And then they asked me maybe if I'd like to have the Starz movie channel package, which was a little less than HBO. No, I do not have Comcast, Marty. We have this outfit called Shentel. Used to be Shenandoah Telephone. They sucketh. But the fact of the matter is, you know, HBO is an extra $20 a month. $20 a month in this household is roughly 5 gallons of milk. It's the question. It's the difference between Agnes having coffee for 2 weeks or not. And I dare say this household is not much different from a whole lot of other American households. So a person who presumes to be progressive telling me that it is inexplicable snobbery not to buy into the magic in a program that is on HBO is kind of missing the point. But then again, you know, right. So, you know, there you go. I mention that particular piece because it kind of sets up this piece, which being the first piece involving actual audio playing through a computer running Windows 8. Well, here's some of that inexplicable magic. Either the audio will play and it'll be what I think it's going to be, or it may be something entirely different or nothing at all. And I have no way of knowing within this operating system how to make sure that it's any one of those three. We, you, me, us, the Horn family, the Horn commune, we like to say that for the most part we live in reality world. We live in a world where, by certain natural processes, for instance, sodium and chlorine combine to form salt, or two hydrogen atoms combine with water, or with oxygen, one oxygen atom to form water, and there is no magic involved. It doesn't sometimes produce water, but other times, if the incantations are done right, it produces chocolate bunnies. It just doesn't. Or resurrection rolls, for that matter. Had a very nice note from Tamara in San Diego right before showtime. She said, stand by, please. Right before showtime, Tamara wrote, "Go away, charm bar." Yeah, it's always there when I don't want it. Like so much of life. Tamara wrote, "Hey, Bob, sorry about all your troubles with the computer machines. I was sad to have missed Titanic Tuesday, except for the fact that had you been on the air, I might not have listened to the rebroadcast of Monday's show, which would have meant missing the story about resurrection rolls. And that really would have been a shame. Holy hell, that was hilarious." Yeah, one of the comments Beth later pointed out on my Facebook page, from someone who made the resurrection rolls, said, "And after we had made the resurrection rolls, I asked my 5-year-old, 'Where did Jesus go?' And she said, 'In my tummy.'" Anyway, Tamara continues, "I finally came across someone who was able to articulate my ambivalence about marriage and equality, and thought I would share, and sent a piece from thoughtcatalog.com called 'You Can Support Equality Without Being Into Marriage.' Tamara says, 'Thanks again, though, to you and Sandra for helping me sort through my thoughts on the specific case before the Supreme Court. When you have progressives defending marriage as a singularly sacred institution and so-called libertarians assaulting the right of legal adults to draw up and enforce a contract, well,' says Tamara, It can make a person a little bit crazy. Indeed. Stand by a sec. Okay, all better. So anyway, to get back to where we were going, and the magic, which I hope won't be magic. It wouldn't be prayer meeting Wednesday if we didn't have a moment with Brother Marion Robertson, the former liquor supply officer of the Christian Broadcasting, later of the Christian Broadcasting Network. I have become even more convinced than I was before that people are beginning to treat Pat Robertson's question time a lot like they treat C-SPAN, where they know that there's no 7-second delay and consequently simply call in and yell the F word once in a while. In the case of Pat Robertson, it takes the form of asking him questions to which it is almost a lead pipe cinch guarantee that he'll offer up something really, really stupid in the way of an answer. And thus, we get, you know, this.
This is Ken who says, why do amazing miracles, like people being raised from the dead, blind eyes opened, lame people walking, happen with great frequency in places like Africa and not here in the United States? What can we do to encourage those things to happen here? Is America too far gone for miracles like this?
Those people overseas didn't go to Ivy League schools.
Not quite that simple.
Well, we're so sophisticated.
Well, actually, you heathen woman bearing the mark of sin branded upon you for all eternity by that filthy harlot Eve, it is that simple. And Pat's here to tell you.
I think we've got everything figured out. We know about evolution. We know about Darwin. We know about all these things that says God isn't real. We know about all this stuff. And if we've been in many schools, the more advanced schools, we have been inundated with skepticism and secularism. And overseas, they're simple, humble. You tell them God loves them, and they say, okay, he loves me. You see?
Overseas, which takes in the entire rest of the planet besides the United States of America, including portions of the Americas which aren't overseas and can actually be reached via a land route. There's that heathen geography. That includes Europe. But I don't think Marion's talking about Europe, do you? No. And I don't think he's entirely convinced that it's just the Ivy League schools that are ruining it for the faith-based community. Because I'll bet you there's some people learning evolution, out in some of them state schools that ain't near as swanky as your Ivy Leagues. But notice the admission that's involved here. It's actually rather important.
And overseas, they're simple, humble.
Notice he said simple before humble. Pat Robertson has apparently been watching Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles again. That line that we used to use here on the program and probably never will again, in which in which Gene Wilder remarks, "You've got to understand, these are farmers, people of the earth, you know, morons." That's what Pat's saying there. It takes a moron to believe in miracles. We know about evolution. We know about Darwin. We know about all these things that says God isn't real. We know about all this stuff. But over there where people can't get edumacated, well, they're simple. And so for simple, stupid people, God routinely provides magic miracles.
With skepticism and secularism. And overseas, they're simple, humble. You tell them God loves them, and they say, okay, he loves me. And you say God will do miracles, and they say, okay, we believe him. And that's what God's looking for. That's why they have miracles.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, however, God has yet to grow a limb back, even for any of the simple, stupid people. Not even so much as the tip end of a pinky. It still requires surgery if you can get there in time and can afford the health care. No limbs, just invisible diseases. There's a terrible joke out there that I will not tell that speaks to this exact issue. But we don't have to have it, because there's plenty of reality to deal with. No, Marty, I will not tell it, because it's got a little bit of meanness to it. But these are opposite sides of the same coin. On the one hand, Alyssa Rosenberg is upset with people who don't like TV shows about their magic, and thinks it's an inexplicable act of snobbery not to like it, while, on the other hand, Marion Pat Robertson, well, he says it's all that being smart that keeps God from doing miracles for people. You got to admit, it would be kind of fun to be... Yeah, see there? Yeah, God, that's right, Jim. God was no help to John Bobbitt either. But that was a case of the goddess of irony working anyway. Yeah, that last name, Bobbitt. I still giggle. But they are. They're opposite sides of the same coin. So I suppose, how often, once a week, once every couple of weeks, two or three times a week, is some story coming out of the developing world about some kid or some elder being stoned to death for being a witch? This isn't my nose, it's a false one. Right? It's tough when you're dealing with the same problem coming from both sides. an inexplicable act of snobbery. Brother. Philip writing in, subject line, Game of Thrones. He says, I can't get worked up by the media's elitism anymore. Let her wax prosaic about her elitist fantasy world. The reality is that the majority of the media live there. A world where there are only two sides to every issue, and both are equally valid. For example, tonight on Nightline, we consider whether anti-Semitism is on the rise. From the Temple Beth Shalom in Berlin, we have Rabbi Judenfrei, and from the Nationalist Socialist Party, rising star Adolf Hitler. Gentlemen, let's begin the discussion. A world in which the sequester has no visible effect, even though it is adversely affecting the poor, the military, and other working class folks, and will worsen over time. A world in which Obama needs to be more reasonable and compromise with the reactionary right, rather than be a non-backslapping elitist who can't be buds with good old boys in Congress. A world in which Wayne LaPierre's every paranoid and racist whim is given airtime. At some point, Philip observes, you have to stop reading or listening to what irks you and is meaningless, as much of the alleged news is. But then, in my home, when I was young, the Game of Thrones was the race to see who among the seven of us could get to the bathroom first after a supper of beans and franks. So Melissa is speaking Hungarian to me, and I don't understand her, nor do I want to. The media show my world about as much as Congress discusses it. There we go. Which again is not to say that, I mean, I love that first season. But, like many of the 99%, it's not available to us. Because, well, choices. Food, Game of Thrones. Gasoline, Game of Thrones. And I'm not trying to be rude to Alyssa Rosenberg at Think Progress. I just think that was a very ill-considered observation. Now, once more onto the breach with Marion. So on the one hand, you've got him proclaiming that miracles only happen for the uneducated people who are simple enough gullible enough to Well, you get the idea. On the other hand, he really does believe in miracles. You'll notice he doesn't say that money keeps us from believing in miracles, because he has enough of that stuff to burn a herd of sopping wet elephants with $100 bills. No, it's all that knowing of stuff. Remember, Pat is probably a billionaire. Yeah. But he does believe in miracles. If only you're silly enough. Unless, of course, well,
this is an anonymous writer who says, I have had chronic illness for a long time now. It has affected almost everything in my life, including my career and dreams. I'm always struggling financially and find myself very disappointed with, quote, the plan God has for my life. So my question is, What if you're not a fan of his plan? What then?
I think the first thing you've got to get straight is that what's happening to you is not necessarily, quote, God's plan for you.
Oh, no, of course not. Satan? Is that what's coming? I don't know. But it ain't God's fault.
What is it Shakespeare said?
He ain't in the Bible, Pat.
Fault, dear Brutus, is not with the stars, but with ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think this stuff, many of the problems you have comes about from your attitude, your own reaction to things, your own abilities, your own work, your own, control of them.
Yeah, right. Praise Jesus, I lost my job. Praise Jesus, I don't have enough food to eat this month. Praise Jesus, everything hurts. Now, we must remember that this guy's coming from a Christian tradition that is part of a dispute that took place 2,000 years ago in which one group of people wanted to pay special attention to the life that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, had led. And the other side wanted to fixate upon his gory murder. And the people who wanted to fixate on murder won, and they became Christianity. And so consequently, an entire cult that's how religions begin. They start as cults. A cult arose that said that if you were suffering, that was good for you because it meant that you were emulating your Savior. If horrible, horrible pain and suffering was good enough for Jesus, it's, by God, literally, good enough for you.
Illness or when people have great disappointment in life. I mean, how you...
Well, yeah, chronic illness can often come about from psychosomatic problems. I don't...
You got that? No miracle for you, chronic illness person, Anonymous. Because it's psychosomatic. That means it's all in your head. That means you're not really sick, and that's why God hasn't healed you, because God knows you're not really sick. You're just malingering. It sounds like God is apparently a coal company workers' compensation lawyer, because that's what those evil bastards always, always, always argue whenever somebody gets hurt.
He ain't as hurt as bad as he looks, or feels, or claims to be. Why, I'm told by our investigator that he gets up every morning, the claimant, and puts on his pants without any help whatsoever. That's why he does not deserve workers' compensation.
There's even a special word that they like to use, malingerer. Ever known anybody? Are you somebody with a chronic pain syndrome? Because they're very real, and if you're listening to this right now, I'm betting that you're sitting there wishing you could put your fist all the way through the face of Marion Pat Robertson, aren't you? Because the problem is, medical science does not understand chronic pain syndromes. Things like, what is it? Myofascial disorders. Not facial like your face, but fascia, F-A-S-C-I-A. Disorders where... They strike women significantly more often than they do men, but they strike both genders, and they're awful. I know people who deal with that, and they're not malingering. They're really, really hurting. But you know, if they could just get a... If they just quit that malingering and get out into the workforce, they could send this man, whom Marty refers to as Uncle Chuckles, $20 a month, right? Yeah,
want to, you know, make a blow stable because doctors say, oh, no, there are other things. Of course there are. But it just sounds like that you've got a negative attitude, you know.
Is Pat a Scientologist now? Is he suggesting that someone has some Thetan problems? Can we get John Travolta and that little short dude, Tom Cruise, can we get them on the phone? Because I think they've got more in common with old Pat than maybe they knew before.
You ought to be positive. You ought to praise the Lord. A merry heart doeth good like medicine.
Oh, goodness me. Pat Robertson has never experienced a moment in his entire miserable, grifting existence that compares with even a minute of someone who suffers from fibromyalgia. A merry heart worketh good like medicine, said someone from the Bronze Age who didn't even fully understand why it rains.
And you need to have a merry heart. And the Bible says, a man shall eat good by the fruit of his lips. You literally can speak into the world around you and the results begin to change.
Yeah. Just like the guy on the cart in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'm not dead yet. You're very ill. You will be very soon. I feel fine. I feel happy. Thunk.
And if you speak negatively, you will have negative. And so don't say it's, quote, God's plan. I think that's a misnomer.
Yeah, it's a misnomer when the magic isn't working the way that Marion wants it to. Any other time, it's God's plan. It's God's plan for you to endorse your Social Security check and just stick it back in the mail to Pat. If, however, you get that check because you suffer from something like fibromyalgia, fibromyalgia is not God's plan for you. Of course, this too was one of those planted questions. I'm convinced of it. People are just sending them in now to watch Pat Robertson do the pretzel trick. It's a little hard to stomach, isn't it? Email coming in from Andy. Andy says, in the subject line, Monopoly Capitalism, welcome to our wonderful world, Microsoft Windows 8. Welcome to Monopoly Capitalism, where government watchdogs, the FTC, and their corporate patrons are one and the same, defined as regulatory capture. Without competition, in regards to Windows 8, Microsoft has all of us by the gonads. Note, in the EU, Google, Facebook, and Microsoft are under regulatory pressure, outright scrutiny, to cease and desist monopolistic practices, particularly in regards to privacy. In the case of Microsoft, it's about thwarting third-party software packages from gaining a foothold on the Windows platform. The EU appears a lot more engaged in stopping anti-competitive behavior than the FTC threatening 2% of revenue as a penalty. 2% of revenue. Damn. That's under Bill Gates' couch. In change. Jingling kind. Think progress, says Andy. Don't forget their BS about the Comandante in Venezuela, the man who thought the poor deserved health care, housing, and a job, which is totally alien to corporate Democrats. At times, it can be a mouthpiece for ex-Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin's Concord Group, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew and Gene Sperling's gang, the fascist edge of the Democratic Party. And I agree. I agree. Like I said, they're better at reporting news than they are at delivering opinion, because most of their opinion has something to do with trying to get everybody to march to the beat of their drum. Tune in to, under the subject line, tune in to watch Pat Robertson do the pretzel trick. Dr. John says, Bob, watch that imagery. Now I have to go bleach out my midbrain. Oh, God, I needed to laugh. I did. I so did. So that's a beginning place, but it is by no means a stopping place. Oh, no. No, no. Two or three stories out of West Virginia. And the goddess of irony playing fast and loose with the National Rifle Association. How not to interpret things that right-wingers say about guns. Yeah, we're not going to be hurting for information this fine, fine prayer meeting evening. We'll take a break. The phone lines are open. And you're welcome to use them. Sorry about Skype not being available tonight, but John Fox is already on the case. And I have no doubt whatsoever that we will eventually get this licked. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. And we do have support that has come in this evening from Sal. Thank you very, very much, Sal. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to offer up something for consideration on the program. And again, just a gentle reminder that we are operating without top of the hour kind of intro music or announces or things like that until we find them again. That's the Starship. That's Miracles. That's Marty Balin on the vocal, I think, isn't it? Going to the phones in just a moment. Philip writing in under the subject line, patent me. Well, Bob, I have restrictive and obstructive pulmonary disease, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and osteoarthritis, and other immune system problems, including chronic pain, have just been approved for disability 11 months before I was eligible for full retirement because I was too obtruse to retire when my physicians first told me to apply 5 years ago. But I don't wish Pat evil. I just want him to wake up one day as me on a cold, rainy winter's day when I feel like a Gumby doll bent the wrong way, and of course, let's not let him have access to any pain medication, lest it impair his happy outlook. Frankly, I don't worry about Pat, because as soon as my first retirement check comes in after 8 months without income, I'm going to buy a gallon of Benny Hinn's Salvation Water and be cured. Hell, I have my wife cleaning the yard now, so I can run around it and praise the Lord when I'm cured. Then again, I recall that Jew who had the miserable attitude 2,000 years ago, you know, the one whose dark outlook compelled him to cry out, "Father, why hast thou forsaken me?" My understanding is he spoke Elizabethan English, Philip notes, rather than be grateful that he had the leisure time to hang around with his two buddies on a very good Friday. It's all really a matter of attitude, Philip observes. Yeah, prayer helps, right, Bob? Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks, Isaac. And as I said, to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. I hope this works.
Good evening, ma'am.
Hey, what's happening?
I'm going to give you a little taste of how we're feeling tonight around here. Junior, that was a great Junior Wells intro to one of his best blues. That guy influenced me a lot. Yeah, it's been hell all the way around as far as these computers. They have this thing rigged. I knew it would happen because I've seen this happen with, it happened with automobiles, too. My generation and your dad's and Christ almighty, what the hell couldn't we do on a car, you know, ourselves to save a buck and...
Yeah, what we referred to...
Somewhere else, like clothes for your kids, you know.
Yeah. Shade tree mechanic, I think, was the official phrase where I grew up.
Yeah, that was it, but that was the only way, you know. Yeah, it's what you're talking about. Like, I use the same program you use, and I've been looking for my discs. All of a sudden, they're gone. And these health agents are a racket. I had a good one, but when she needed money, she proved to me that she would... go to any lengths to get it. And this is what happens with people when they're up against the wall, which a lot of people are in this society.
Right. Well, this is a wall that has been... people have been driven toward the wall, and the wall has been driven toward people, Bill.
To them. You know, I heard a guy this morning. Who was Reagan's guy who... the man who did the tax talk under Reagan's first term?
Stockman?
Can't remember. What?
David Stockman?
Yeah. You should have heard him this morning on, public radio show. He was tearing the heart out of these guys today, these financiers and the way they're running things. And yet he was a hardcore conservative financially himself.
David Stockman began repenting of his ways all the way back in the George Bush administration.
Yeah, these guys who are halfway decent, intelligent men can see when things go wrong. And because I know so many people who voted for Reagan, it was you have to be kidding me. His movie career was taking a turn to nowhere, you know.
Right.
When he started making speeches for GE and here, old Ranger, here's a job for you. Yeah, I worked for a guy that used to give out copies of John Birch Society books. What a dude, you know? Oh, God. It was horrible. And of course, most of us, what was it, Nundeer Call of Treason was the one that stands out because it became immediately known to the younger people in the his employ that the book should be called None to Your Color of Reason.
Barry Goldwater, wasn't it?
I don't know who wrote the book, but it came out under the aegis of the Birch Society. They were quite active. I went to a few of the lectures because I couldn't afford to go to the comedy club, you know, so I went down to hear these guys. But it isn't funny anymore because there's a whole... I listen to local college talk radio, and it has me wondering, have I gone straight and raving maniac compared to these people? Oh, there's always... there's a government plot for everything. Yeah, there's a plot, all right, and you end up being put in it. The only plot that I can think of. I mean, these guys have things figured out to an extreme that... boy, you know, it's ridiculous. Yeah, so you were up to your neck in this stuff, huh?
Oh, brother.
I assembled a few for a friend of mine in the early 2000 era. He had a shop, and all I had to do was, being a TV repairman, all I had to do was, I was good practice. All I had to do was screw the parts in. You know, being a TV repairman, I had lots of practice, so to speak. Actually, I was pretty honest about the whole thing. There's music, it was, you know, between the two of them, you could survive. It's just, yeah, Stockman got me this morning. I couldn't believe he was saying the things he was saying. But it's scary out there. You see it closer than I do, you know. When you're going down there to work for the AIC Act, what, you're getting some funny response from some of these politicians. When I say funny, I don't mean humorous. I mean a little probably just off the wall years ago.
You know what happens? We've taken some meetings with some Republican folks, and, you know, they're not openly hostile to you. You just are made aware that it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
And
the people who have sold land to these frackers think they're getting a good deal. That's how dumb they are, bro. I didn't realize that they're coming off to you like that. How are they putting it?
It's just things like, well, you know, the congressman's very concerned about jobs, and we can't let the environment take precedence over jobs.
Yeah, right. Jobs, huh?
Yeah.
Jobs? I don't know. Of any decent paying. I talk to a lot of folks, and a lot of guys I know are 40-year-old musicians. They're hanging in with music because they said there's nothing else out there. Years ago, you could start up a TV repair shop on the side. You could bring in some money. I'd go out and tune people's cars when they needed it. I tried not to do brakes. That was too hairy, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Make a mistake on those, you felt really bad about the whole thing. I do my own, but, you know. Although there are some people that if Robertson needs a brake job, send him around. I'll take care of it for him. It's reached the point of what the hell do you do? When are they pulling XP? You say they're pulling in a couple of years?
August of 2014, according to Marty, is when it becomes an orphan.
Both of my computers are running XP, and the old one, my one I actually bought with the program in it. One of the companies, what's a company that starts with a D? Like a Damage?
Yeah.
Computer outfit? Yeah.
That are on their way out, I think.
Yeah, I guess they are. Because I was wondering what the hell to do to get some backup programs, and maybe somebody who's... Well, I've got a couple good advisors. One of them is active in the music situation, and the other one lives in the same state as me. And actually came up here to visit me one day, and it was so nice to meet the man. All of a guy. And so many of the people who call in, I would just love to sit down And hell, I'd even have a beer with them, which is very something I don't usually do. I quit drinking back then. Man, when the cops started coming out of the woodwork, you know, with your wallet in one hand. I remember one time a cop stopped me. I was going to my doctor at 11 in the morning. He pulls in the lock behind me and he says to me, "Are you drinking this morning?" And wise-ass Bill, I sucked my head out the window and said, "You buying?" And it was on. But I was parked in my doctor's parking lot.
I'm sorry. You buying?
Yeah, exactly. You know, basically, that was where I was headed with this thing. And I went in. I yelled at him. I said, "Well, come on, officer. Let's go inside and get a blood test." I hadn't drunk in the, I hadn't drunk at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Well, yeah, see, that reminds me of that, and it's constantly on my mind, it seems. That scene from the wonderful little comedy from, what was it, the 1980s, Mr. Mom, Michael Keaton, yeah. and the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Terry Garr, in which the jealous Michael Keaton meets her boss at the door at, you know, early in the morning, and she's getting ready to go away on business, and says, "You want a beer?" And Martin Mull, the boss, says, 7 o'clock in the morning. Michael Keaton responds, "Scotch?"
You know, they filmed a movie at this place, the Euclid Tavern, where I worked for many years in Cleveland. It was Keaton, Michael J. Fox, Jones Yet. It's called A Light of Day, which the movie hardly saw. But I'll tell you, Fox was a nice guy to talk to. And Keaton was the guy I spent a lot of time with. He was a baseball fan and a fisherman. Now, there's two things that will keep us going for an hour easily, you know.
Yeah, right.
And he was, his wife had just had a baby, Amanda, he wanted to go home. Fox was a wonderful young man because he was 24 years old and a lot of dough and a handsome man. Of course, he's had some problems since then. And I took my neighbor's, a fishing buddy of mine's niece up there who was like 6 or 7, and Keaton kind of, I'm not Keaton, but Fox shook hands with her. I thought the kid was going to go mad in front of me. It was a nice thing to be able to do for somebody. It was a dud of a movie, but it was fun to watch him work. And they say Keaton was a kind of a guy that was, you know, in a lot of ways, the same age and social class as I was. And he had a sick sense of humor, too, which with me, that always works.
Good Pittsburgh boy.
I think it was a better. Well, I'm going to let somebody else get out of here and say something more intellectual than I am tonight, or most nights. But if anybody has any concepts of what to do, what do you do when you have to replace software? When you want to, you know, there's got to be a way to do
it.
Bend over.
Microsoft is a merciless lot.
Oh, you're terrible. And I learned years ago every hustle there was in the car repair business, everything that you could do to save a dollar. And there's a lot of other ways to save money out there. I could probably I should maybe just have a friend of mine, because these things are getting old, as you know. What made you change programs? Age?
It's a bit of a complicated story. But
you have to do a lot more with yours than I have to do with mine, that's for sure.
Well, I had to wipe this thing completely, and I had no way to go back and get the light. I tore this place apart looking for the old license key.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
And it just wasn't there.
Yep.
And that meant Bob has to buy new operating system. And so, the choice of, you know, Windows 7, $200, Windows 8, $120. Well, that became fairly easy.
It's worse than 7.
Oh, it's no. 7 Bill is completely comprehensible. As compared to 8. 8 was made for telephones and tablet devices. A request coming in from Isaac, Bill.
Yeah, oh, there's my man. There's the guy who knows it all.
Yeah, Isaac says, ask Bill to tell his story why Chrissy Hynde hates him.
Well,
Chrissy Hines being, of course, the from the Pretenders. Right.
Well, you have to listen to her song, Precious. At some point in that song, you'll hear a phrase, Howard the Duck, which was a character, you know, in this kind.
Yeah.
And Mr. Stress stayed in a world that they never made. Not me, I'm too crazy. Well, Chrissy had been brought up from Akron. She was just starting, getting started. A friend of mine brought her in and said, Bill, you'll like to work with her. She's got talent, which she did. Vocal talent, good, very strong. But my sister was dying of ovarian cancer, literally. My sister had like 2 or 3 months to live. And Chrissy made the comment that cancer was psychosomatic. Now, I had to be held back. She wouldn't have had any career. It'd be hard to sing with a broken neck. To say that when my sister's dying of this disease is not very nice. I had a hot temper and such. Anyway, they interviewed me for a 20-year anniversary or 25-year anniversary of the band. And I made a remark that, because Chrissy was hanging around and running the city with, you know, and staying here and there. And there was a certain thing that happens when you don't bathe that often. And anyway, my remark was that she thought that the bathtub was something you wanted your horse in. That was one of my smart-ass original lines. And she heard about it later, because her brother plays up here in Canton. He's a wonderful sax player and a very nice guy, and he'd laugh at those kind of things himself. You know how brothers and sisters are.
Yeah.
I have a sick, twisted, nasty sense of humor. And I don't care if I'm looking at the guy in the mirror and he looks a short, fat guy. I'll carve him up like a Thanksgiving turkey. I'll go after myself too when the time calls for it. But I made that remark and a few others that were not real nice. But I thought I was talking off the record. And these guys ran the damn thing in the local news, the local entertainment paper. Whoops. And, you know, she's made some remarks from the stage when she shows up here. But, you know, I told her brother, I said, you know, you tell her, you know, she should know my sense of humor by now. And that was one of the things I said. There was a few more that I can't even remember too much myself. But that was one of them because, well, you know how it was. Hell, I never did that. I never was crashing in other people's houses and couches, you know, trying to do something. I was mama's boy until I got married, you know. I was either staying with mom or whatever lady I was seeing at the time, you know. Which, you know, the ones that had the bad eyesight, those were the ones I was seeing. They didn't get a good look at me. Anyway, that's the story of Isaac there, yeah. There's a guy, Isaac and this other young man from a little south of here where I am now are two guys that I rely on for a lot of brain power when it comes to computers. And one of them provides some awful good music to me on a computer, you know, stuff, sweet soul music, buddy. And you know who on the group I'm talking about that he works with, don't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah. And those cats, they knock me out every time I hear them. Because, man, that's way ahead of anything I'll ever play in my life. But anyway, you hang in there, and thanks for getting the computers going. But, yeah, I'd like to find copies of this program again. And I don't know why somebody...
Well, you never know what's going to happen. There might be somebody out there who can help you with that.
It might be. You never know, because this is one hell of a group of people. I hear people out there, young lady with the two nieces.
Oh,
man,
Sandra.
I about fall off the chair when she gets going. She really hits it. If I could hit a baseball that far and that well, I'd still be playing. Anyway, you take care of yourself, my friend.
You have a good night, Bill. Thanks for calling.
You too.
Bye now.
Tonight.
We'll try to find our way around to playing the song in question at some point so we can hear what Bill was talking about. Onward we go. Lines open, 304-658-3333. Jump on in if you want to. Hey, welcome to the program.
Woof.
Yeah, woof indeed, Jim. What's happening?
Program, Keith. My God, you could launch a missile more easily with their codes than the program, Keith.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I knew because I've done it in the past, it was not going to be an easy task. But
I told you.
I told you about
Windows 8.
I know.
Remember we had that conversation about that, and I even got a new computer.
Yep.
And, you know, when my Sony Vaio just died, and all I did was, I said, I don't want to deal with this. And basically, after the Sony Vaio had been left dormant, it restored itself. And I sent the other computer back. Guy came, got it. No problem.
No, this is a nasty bit of business. Yeah. I'm not averse to learning new ways of doing things, but when things are made, it seems deliberately more difficult. I mean, we had an email a few minutes ago, Jim, saying Windows 8 is meant for mobile devices. Well, proof positive, I went to one of the websites that I often use for pulling up show topics, and lo and behold, it popped up on the screen in its mobile version.
Well, that's what it's for, touch screen, stuff like that. And, you know, I don't need that kind of stuff. And that's the reason I'm real, real fortunate that, you know, my Sony Vaio came back to life. It was restored. It was a miracle. I'll just call it that. But, you know, it's what I say about Windows 8 is what they said in 2010 about Europa. Send no people there.
I know.
Yeah, pursuant to monologue or dialogue with cops, my sister and her wilder days had one, and I never will forget this. And when she got stopped for doing 95 or something like that, and the cop said, "Where's the fire, young lady?" She said, "In your eyes, big boy."
Ooh.
Luckily, it was a local cop, and my father was the mayor of the town. So.
That helps.
Take it from there. I mean, I'm not going to go into all that because, I mean, I'm not going to.
You know, it sounds like there was a streak that ran through your family, Jim.
What do you mean?
Well,
wisecracks?
Wisecracks and, I don't know, coloring outside the lines.
God, we did that. That's for sure. Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. Last weekend, they just had the Carolina Cup, which is the biggest cocktail party in the Southeast. And, my God, my sister's husband here again are going to family, and I don't want to bore anybody with this, but he was drunk and he was driving away and this black officer stopped him and he had some things to say to that officer and he was sent to the hoosegow. And so my sister, who was equally plowed, called my dad up and said, "I want you to get out of jail." And he said, "I've already heard from the officer and he's staying there till tomorrow, which will be Sunday. Would you like for him to be there until Monday?" He said, "You will go with him to Officer McKinney and you will apologize. And if you don't, it's going to be Pat and Charlie for him for a year. I'll see to it." And if you don't think I mean it, I will do it because I have the connections.
Taken to heart, I trust?
Very much so. Very much so. Absolutely. Very much so. The last caller was talking about David Stockman. I saw that program too, but you know, we've been talking about David Stockman for a long time. And back in 1981, when Reagan first gained the presidency, he had written an article for the Atlantic Monthly, decrying supply side economics and got into a world of crap about it. And so basically Reagan's closer, his kitchen cabinet, got on Stockman, and Stockman was OMB director at the time, and he said, you better go in there on your knees and beg forgiveness from the boss and all this kinds of stuff. Well, Reaganomics later, under George H.W., became voodoo economics, and we've seen how well the supply side or Laffer curve worked, haven't we?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I guess what he has done since the W. Bush administration is in the way of some sort of expiation, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. He has. As a matter of fact, I think, I don't know when Stockman left, and or I've forgotten how many years he was with Reagan at OMB, but he may have lasted the first term, I don't know. But I do know that he was severely admonished by the guys who were supporting all that crap with Reagan to go in and beg forgiveness and expiation and all this kind of crap. I mean, it was just crazy. But Stockman's book, The Power of Politics, is a good read still, because it really goes through a lot of things that were happening then that are happening now. End result, The Power of Politics by David Stockman. The guy hadn't changed his tune that much either. He realized that, you know, this thing would not work. Reaganomics was just pure bull.
Yeah, it was not an economic theory. It was a theory of pillage and plunder.
Well, basically, that's exactly what it is. You know, it's just absolutely false, because basically rich people do not allow their money to fall down into the lower echelons to provide money for other people, but they keep it themselves and take it on Wall Street and to offshore banks and stuff like that. They don't provide jobs, and you know, they don't try to ameliorate any existing condition, economic or social or otherwise, because out of the goodness of their hearts, and should they ever do so, believe you me, there's something in it for them. So, I mean, there it is, there you have it.
Well, and that's why I said what I said to Bill a little bit ago, Jim. You've got people up against the wall, and they've been pushed there, and at the same time, the same forces are pushing the wall towards people.
Yeah, I think basically,
and it's not, and it is not a battle between the irresistible force and the immovable object.
No. I think the wall is coming at much greater speed than it used to be, and it's not people being pushed against it, but rather vice versa. But what can I say? That's the economic situation, and we're not going to solve it tonight. Oh, one other interesting thing. I was watching. Excuse me. Program on the BBC about the agony of Phil Spector, going back to music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just incredible. Even though he got involved in that murder thing in 2001, that man had a lot of impact on music all the way from, God, the 50s, 60s, the 70s, and his impact on the Beatles and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah, what was his signature thing? The Wall of Sound.
Wall of Sound, right. I mean, he was. They gave. It was a televised interview before he went to prison, and he was trying to explain to himself explain to the person who was interviewing him. As to, you know, what he did, and they were playing the songs as they went along. And some of those songs I haven't heard in years. And we're talking about when, you know, I was a boy. And the influence he had on, you know, the people who produced them, how he would basically produce a song and take something that was just crap and make it into a beautiful melody. I mean, I don't agree with the guy's personal life as far as his criminology is concerned, but he did make a lot of contributions, and that was a very good program. And if anybody has the opportunity to see it again, I would suggest that they do so. It's worthy of viewing.
Sounds like it.
Absolutely. Worthy of viewing. And the only thing else I have to bring to the fore, since you had so many problems with W8, will be, let's see. Well, I guess Buck Wild has been put on hold for a while.
Yeah, I got, I've gone back and forth on whether or not to even bring that story up, because I do not wish to be perceived as trafficking on that.
Well, you know, the reason I bring it up is because all of these reality shows, and they first got started with Jerry Springer, are basically exhibitions of people behaving badly.
Oh, they absolutely are. What? Well, here, let me go ahead and just do this.
I mean, and that's the, I mean, that's what they all are. I mean, whether it's Mob Wives or whatever, I've mentioned that one before, or Buck Wild or whatever. I mean, you know, what can I say? It's people behaving badly, acting in poor taste, and that's putting it mildly, but just acting like complete asses.
Well, I went over, and I'm sure it's been scrubbed by now, maybe not. I went over and checked out some of this young man's some of the tweets this young man had put out. Getting married at 22 sounds a lot like leaving a party at 9:30. Newton's third law of emotion: for every male action, there is a female overreaction. Let me find a couple more here.
Wouldn't know about that, Bob.
This is, of course, Shane Gandy, who was found dead of asphyxiation in his vehicle on Monday, having decided at apparently 3 o'clock on Sunday morning to go four-wheeling and leaving from a bar. You know, that's never a good sign. You ain't ever lived if you haven't gone muddin'.
Now, what exactly is mudding? I don't know.
Mudding is to take one's four-wheel drive vehicle and go driving around in slop. Mud. And the report that I read said that he, his uncle, and a friend were found dead in the truck. He was the vehicle. He was behind the wheel. The tailpipe was full of mud, which means, of course, that, you know, carbon monoxide exhaust, you know, got them.
And they were too drunk to exit the vehicle?
That I don't know. But they declared that they were going mudding at about 3 o'clock in the morning and made the declaration in a bar.
Well, I heard something to the effect that they were having a mudding contest to raise money for this boy's funeral.
Then this tweet: nothing ruins your Friday like realizing it's only Wednesday.
I'm sorry?
Nothing ruins your Friday like realizing it's only Wednesday. Let's see. Then there's another tweet: I'm an ass kind of guy. Then it's a great day to be alive. It's Friday. Who's ready to party? And, you know, basically on and on.
Well, you can go on with those. I mean, those things are just his tweets, and a tweet is a tweet is a tweet, but, you know.
But I got, you know how I am with neologisms and so forth. It occurred to me that we are no longer, that when you take the totality of the Appalachian experience into account, whether it be this young man from the MTV exploitation series or the 4,000 excess deaths that happen in mountaintop removal communities every year, we're no longer hillbillies, Jim. We're expendabilities.
Well, I agree with you. I totally agree. wholeheartedly. And when people see stuff like that and they look at this kind of stuff, I mean, one girl in this program was arrested for drugs. Another one was popped for DUI. This guy wants to go mudding.
Well, apparently, and this young man had had his first DUI before he turned 21.
Well, that's not exactly good either. But I'm very sorry it happened.
But I am too, and I want to make that clear. And I also want to make clear, Jim, since we are talking about this story, that in many ways you can take MTV's Buck Wild and understand it not as simply as they tried to portray it, a bunch of kids who ain't got much, who are having fun with what they got. That's the way they describe themselves. But it is better understood as a picture of the hopelessness and the ennui, if you will, that attends being a young person in Appalachia and has largely attended that status for in excess of 100 years.
Well, Bob, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Well, why would it change unless someone wants it to change? Unless we as a country stand up and say, you know, it's got to get better. And there are a lot of places, and among others, Chris Hedges did a very good job of pointing out some of these places. There are a lot of places where we need a national will to make things better. I mean, since we've wandered off into the woods of West Virginia now, Jim, I guess you saw or heard the story out of Mingo County today.
No.
Well, you know where Mingo County is, right?
Not really. No.
Well, it's down in southern West Virginia on the Tug Fork River across the river from Kentucky. It is the home of the Hatfields and McCoy, the West Virginia side of the Hatfields and McCoy feud.
Okay.
It was known in the early parts of the 20th century as Bloody Mingo. It's the county that is the home of the little town of Matewan, wherein took place a rather significant skirmish in the civil rights struggles of working people in the early part of the 20th century. And today, the sheriff of Mingo County, a man by the name of Eugene Crum, did as was his wont to do at lunchtime every day, and that is to go and grab him a sandwich from the little local restaurant there in Williamson. And he'd sit in his vehicle and kind of do some, you know, light, low-rent surveillance on one of the local pill mill houses. And today, while he was eating his lunch, a man came up, stuck a gun to his head, and pulled the trigger. It yet remains to be seen if this will get as much coverage as the shootings of the shooting in Texas of the district attorney and his wife. And it's certainly not a competition. Tennis Melvin Maynard, 37 years old, of Del Barton, was gunned down as following the shooting. He is in not the best of condition in a hospital in Logan, West Virginia, Jim. But we must understand and we must remember that America does not have a gun problem. We've been told that repeatedly by the National Rifle Association, right? We don't have a gun problem.
Well, I think in, where was it, in Ohio, that the sales on guns today or yesterday or whenever it was before the governor signed the bill or something were just astronomical. So, I mean, I guess America does have a gun problem because this was a ban against assault weapons and things of that nature.
But there will be no assault weapons ban passed through the Congress of the United States. And apparently there will be no background check law passed through the Congress of the United States.
Well,
And bloody right. And bloody being Mingo right. goes on being bloody.
Well, being all right, he has a lot of money.
And a lot of right, and a lot of pet congressmen.
And a little hush money does a lot of talking. That's the way it is. You know, in this country, he who has the gold makes the rule. And that goes for not only guns, it goes for oil, it goes for coal, it goes for everything like that. I mean, you know, it's very hard to fight established organisms of that nature, or, well, that's what they are. They are organisms, as well as being, you know, corporate entities. It's very hard to fight people like that who have that kind of money. I mean, if you have the money, you can win. But if you don't, you will not. And it's very doubtful. I mean, these people just have, you know, K Street, Wall Street, and Back Street. They've got it all sewn up. And we've got a Congress that's already now, there was an article about how congressmen are not paid enough. And they were saying in the article that I saw on the internet a couple days ago that each congressman should receive at least, to keep him in line with the inflation and this, that, and the other, should receive a minimum raise of $42,000 a year.
Well, you know what, Jim? I'll go so far as to say that I would be okay with tripling a congressman's salary if we could pass a law that said they were not allowed to take so much as one thin dime from an external source.
Well, I can't. Well, they can. I mean, for example, look at the mint.
Oh, no. I understand that. That's what I'm saying. I quadruple their salary. If we can pass a law that says they cannot take money from outside sources.
Oh, I know, but they can, and they do, and they will continue.
Then we ought to cut their pay in half.
Well, DeMint, I mean.
That are just sew NASCAR patches on them and cancel their salaries altogether and just let corporate America pay their damn salaries.
Well, that'd be an idea. I mean, look at what DeMint did. I mean, he left his job to head the Heritage Foundation. And he sextupled his salary. He's making over $1 million a year now.
Yeah.
That's the way Washington is. It's a pathway to access and excess. And that's what we have representing us. And that's the reason you're not going to have a lot of, well, in my opinion, a lot of positive reactions from some of these people. That's just the way they are. And that's the way the system is. And I really don't see it changing anytime soon because, I mean, you know, who's going to want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg?
Well, there are some who have. I remember when Bob Graham somewhat moderate Democratic senator Fritz Hollings from South Carolina.
Used to play tennis with him at the Citadel Racquet Court.
They both got out of the Senate because they said they were sick of spending all of their time fundraising.
That sounds like Fritz. He's still a little graduate. You know, he had this thing, who wears a hairpiece on one of these talk shows?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know.
Oh, Sam Donaldson.
Oh, he hadn't been on TV in a while, has he?
I guess not. But anyway, Sam Donaldson got into it with Fritz about, he was talking about how Fritz went to a special tailor in downtown D.C., very exclusive. Of course, he could afford it. I mean, why not do it? And Fritz just came back and he said, you know, that shop is just right next to where he has his toupee made.
God bless him.
He did. And I remember when I was like a junior at Citadel or a sophomore at Citadel, this was during the summer, and I was a counselor at the boys' summer camp down there. and I taught archery there, and it was next to the racquet court. And Fritz would yell over, "Want to bounce the balls?" And so I'd have to go over there, and I said, "Yes, sir." And he and my dad were classmates at the Citadel. I knew old Fritz pretty well. He had that, I loved his accent, didn't love all of what he said, but he was a nice fella and enjoyed his company. And so that's my contributions for the evening.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take Fritz Hollings over Jim Demented or...
Oh, God, I mean, Jim Demented.
Or Lindsey Graham Cracker. Or...
Oh, yeah, I mean, Fritz was a... he was a good guy in many respects. In some respects, not. But nonetheless, it's gotten a lot worse than it used to be.
Indeed. Jim, have yourself a good evening.
Same to you, sir. Good night.
All right, bye now. Calling from not too awfully far from here, that's our buddy Jim. And onward we go. It's about a minute past 8 p.m. here on the East Coast, a minute past 5 in the Pacific time zone. And the lines are open, 304-658-3333. Let's make up for a little bit of lost time given what didn't happen last night, i.e. a show. And a little note, the PayPal button still works if you care to use it. We certainly care if you care to use it, because that's how we stay on the air. We are at $10 for the evening, and much appreciative for that. And it would be mighty nice if we could get up a little closer to 150. So that's only 14 folks at 10 bucks a piece, or 28 at 5, or 7 at 20. Yeah, the math on the fly thing with me. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, is it me?
Yes.
Okay, Lib in South Carolina.
Oh, hey, what's happening, Lib?
How are you doing?
You know, I'm hanging on to some tenuously attached sanity.
Oh my God, I have Windows 8 and it sucks so bad. It's terrible.
The misery loves company. And
oh, man.
I'm glad it's not just me.
Oh no. Just to get the damn thing to start working, you got to jump through hoops. And it's like, just...
Well, when I found out what I had to do to restart the damn thing so it would keep loading updates...
I can only imagine.
I thought I was going to have to start drawing incantations in the air.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about that bad. And... frustrating, and it's not designed for people like us that just want to get something done.
Well, it is. It strikes me as certainly not being done, designed for anybody who actually wants to do meaningful work with media.
Right. Absolutely. It's basically designed for idiots, as far as I can tell. But
well,
I'm not on that boat, you know. But
right, but course of my casting about, you know, typing search phrases like "where's the effing start button,"
right,
and "where's the GD control panel," because at that point, I that doesn't happen to me very often, Lib. From time to that I'll actually just type profanity into a search query.
Right.
But in this case, I wanted to contribute a little bit to the zeitgeist, I guess, and just wondered, because lo and behold, I started typing, "where is the goddamn start?" And it said button on Windows 8. And I knew, it filled in the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I ran across a video that said, "watch a 3-year-old use Windows 8." And I thought, well, that makes...
I cannot get mine to print. You know, I'm trying to do my taxes. The only time in the year that I ever use a printer, because I just don't print anything. But it took me a week to figure out that, you have to turn on the printer, get it to recognize the computer, and they start to talk to each other, and still it doesn't work. It's a terrible thing, but going back 4 subjects, did you know that Phil Ramone died last week?
No.
Yeah.
The last of the Ramones?
No, Phil Ramone, record producer.
Oh, no,
L.
No. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Google Phil Ramone. He was best friends with Karen Carpenter.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was. I hear Ramone, and I immediately start thinking, hey, ho, let's go.
Yeah, well, I actually met the man about 20 years ago. He was doing a seminar for audio technicians, and back then he was talking about sitting in his basement with a T1 line, and Gloria Estefan was out on the road, and she would stop into a recording studio at 2 o'clock in the morning after she got off work and play a mix over the T1 line, and he would be going, okay, on the bridge, bring up the guitar, 3 dB, I need more bass drum, sweeten the bass guitar a little bit more high end, and he was doing this from his studio across the country. That was 20 years ago. And all of us, you know, military audio technicians were sitting there with our jaws on the ground.
I had no idea that he was behind the recording of Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday to President Kennedy.
That's a new one to me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't surprise me a bit.
Yeah, and he lived to the age of 79.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I met him 14 years ago.
14 Grammys.
Yeah. I got to share a cup of coffee with him during intermission, and I walked away going, damn, I have 100 more questions. You know? The guy was incredible. He was absolutely incredible, and just the chance to be able to meet him and spend a couple hours with him, it was awesome. So I'm glad that you now know he's no longer with us, but a sad passing.
No, especially in light of the fact that he'd gone in to have an aortic aneurysm fixed and then got pneumonia in the hospital.
Yeah.
Hospital's a terrible place to be sick.
Tell me about it. I've got to go back to the VA this month. Good nurses, for the most part. They actually assign me a primary care guy. He's mine. He's great. The specialists, they're assholes.
In the room just long enough to, not even long enough to read their name on their coat before they're gone.
Oh, God. My cardiologist put his stethoscope on top of my sweater to listen to my heart. What a freaking bozo.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah. In other news, did you hear about North Carolina?
Oh, yeah, I got that. It's
Oh, my God. These people, you know, they want to establish a state religion. But luckily down here in South Carolina, we've got Sandfraud is going to go against it. Oh, that's what we call him. You know? He's going to be against
Mark, don't feed the strays Sandfraud.
Yeah. C Street. He was living in the C Street house before Demented was. No wonder he was running around on his wife. That place was a house of ill repute. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was. It makes me want to wander around and go find it, because I think it's not too far from the AKED quarters.
Please do. You know, isn't it a brothel now? I don't, you know.
What do you mean now?
Well, yeah. Oh, my God.
It was a brothel for Jesus.
That's where Ensign lived. What, didn't Bitter live there for a while?
Yeah. I think he lives in our building now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
He's got some fabulous shiny orange satin gym shorts.
Oh, God. Do not send pictures, please. But anyways.
No, I'm just working up my courage one of these days to walk in there. You know, we need to talk about the little hillbilly fetuses.
Just when you think it could not get any crazier, you know, they come out with people like this. Just freaking insane. But anyways, I'll let you go. I just had, you know, a few of those tidbits for you. I am rooting for Elizabeth Colbert.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you ought to get out and work on her campaign.
I've sent her money. I live way across state. But, yeah, like Stephen says, she's freaking sane. You know, why not vote for her? You know?
Well, but doesn't that make some presuppositions about voting majorities in South Carolina?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, doesn't vote for like? Because that's the only way I can explain the persistent office holding of people like Steve King of Iowa and 1L Michelle Bachman of Minnesota.
Louis Gohmert.
Oh, I mean, that's Texas.
Oh,
but
God. I know. I mean, where the hell did they come up with these people?
And now we've got an, I don't know if you've seen this, but now we've got an anointed new darling boy of the libertarians.
Oh, yeah. I've been all over that shit on Facebook.
Yeah. Justin Amash.
Oh, no, no. I thought you were talking about the doctor from, Johns Hopkins?
No. This guy's already in Congress. He is only 32 years old, and he has anointed himself as the new Ron Paul.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And he's proven it, because he says he believes in limited government, and he's opposed to the Defense of Marriage Act, but he wants to ban abortion within 3 days of conception, because he believes in limited government. And I guess by limited government, he means government that can limit the rights of other people.
Right. Yeah. There are certain people that really do need to have their balls removed. You know?
Or a brain implanted, either one. I'm okay.
Yeah. One or the other, but just it doesn't get any, you know, the insanity that ensues, it is just mind-boggling to me. But anyways, I'm out of things to talk about. You keep up the good work.
I will certainly try, Lib. I appreciate it.
Yeah, try to keep your hair. Okay.
You mean what's left of it?
Yeah. We are follically challenged.
Well, that's why I've been letting it grow lately. I'm going to go for one of those great big televangelist comb overs eventually.
I'm growing my ponytail, but eventually we'll have a little bit to send to Locks of Love. But,
all right. Well, Lib, you have yourself a good evening. I do. I appreciate the call.
Yeah. Be well.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Lib in South Carolina, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Lib?
Hey.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, what's up, man?
I didn't hear you. I dislike Windows 8 so much. Really doesn't seem so bad to me. I've had it for about 4 months now. I've gotten used to it.
Well, for me, I can get used to having to do new tricks in order to do things that I'm used to doing in a different way. That's not a problem. But when it becomes functionally impossible to do the things that I have to do in order to get this show out, then that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I can see how that could be a bad thing. When I first got this computer, and it was the old internet, I had to get backlogged, whatever it locked up on you. Like I said, I think the biggest problem people tend to have with the biggest freak out at first is the fact that if you swipe left or right too fast, you jump from any programmer in back to that stupid tile wall.
Well, and frankly, the tile wall, why couldn't they make a mobile version or something? This has absolutely no meaning to me.
It's because they, just like everyone else, they see things going mobile. So it really is meant so that eventually people will all use their mobile devices and it'll be synced to this and synced to that. I really think they think they're going to corner like the Apple market type thing and everyone's going to switch from their iPhone to Windows 8 phone. I heard from the conception a Windows phone is the worst thing you can buy. They're very unstable, like Internet Explorer used to be, various different things. So I'll never have one.
Oh, you couldn't give me a Windows phone.
I am no
fan of Apple or Steve Jobs.
Neither am I. I have a Droid, so I think the icons and the tiles thing maybe flows a little bit with me because swiping back and forth Windows.
Well, that's I'm convinced that Windows 8 is supposed to remind people of Android.
I think it is, but I think it was also designed to work on their new tablet they've been advertising with a stupid detachable keyboard. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And that's the point for the sliding back and forth type thing. And then, yes, they're modeling after Android more than even an Apple phone. What else was I going to say? Can't think of. Oh, in terms of programs, I told you before I'm a gamer.
Yeah.
I went out 2 weeks ago, and I bought the new SimCity, about the geekiest game you can find. And to my horror, when I went to first buy it, they said, you realize you have to be connected to the internet the whole time to play that game, right? I said, what, you can't play offline? No, there's no more offline modes. You have to play connected to the internet the whole time. Not just that, everything you do is through the cloud now. There's no saving things to your own computer. It's all through them. And again, it's a platform where they're seeing everything going online, going mobile, so that when you buy the game, you don't really, I don't think you really install the game. You get a download version of it, and then you play it from
there. Well, this is an ongoing manifestation of the whole nasty business of licensing instead of property ownership rights.
Right, and that's the, I forget what, a while ago, I know a lot of people complained about this, so eventually Steve Jobs and Apple saw it the public way. A long time, not too long ago, there was a time when you bought something from iTunes or something, if you lost it, you freaking lost it. You didn't get it back.
Yeah.
I know through lots of protesting and this and that and people threatening to boycott them, now there's an ability to download things so many times every 60 days and you can keep them forever. I know that was changed, but for a long time, if you deleted something by accident, well, screw you, buy it again. You can't give it to you again. And they're awful hard about returning things, too. If you happen to click the auto buy one thing too many times or too fastly. I was told one time it was a one-time deal and they wouldn't do it in the future. I'm like, okay. So they were nice about it that time, but they warned me they'd never do it again.
Well, that's a sure path to you will know. So was my business a one-time deal.
Right, exactly. And I haven't really done a lot of iTunes since, and like I said, I switched to Android, which is a little bit better in my mind anyway. But yeah, like I was saying, I noticed a lot of things are going to not. And Microsoft has always been bad at the licensing thing from the get go. I mean, they're no stranger to doing that. I remember a point when the Windows 95 days. I remember that operating system, and that was a horror for a while too.
Yeah, that was the before that was Windows for warehouses.
Right.
3.11.
I remember 3.111 when I had a 300 megabytes, and I never thought I'd fill it. And then, 6 years later, here I was using 1,000 gigabytes, no problem. But I remember with Windows 95, it might have been Windows 98, the first version I got of it, you only were allowed so many installs on your disk. So if you had a virus problem from, say, malicious software from going to some nasty site, and you had to install more than X amount of times, you had to buy a new CD.
Right.
Or buy a new licensing on, which is the same idea. Which always seemed kind of a weird thing to me, seeing that every computer at the time shipped with it, you had no choice but to use that program.
Well, and that's and that's where you're over a barrel. I mean, that's the barrel I was over last night. $199 for Windows 7 or $119 for 8.
Right. I can appreciate that. Trust me. I realize that. I mean, I think I was going to buy Windows 8 originally. I'm kind of glad, I guess, probably didn't buy it. I was forced into it because my laptop died. And I just bought a small, it's not a tablet, but it's more like a netbook. It's still a laptop, just a smaller condensed version of one. It does all the same thing.
Well, I tell you what I'm hearing this evening, Jeremy, that disturbs me more than anything is this idea that that eventually we're all going to be working on tablets and mobile devices. I won't type more than 5 sentences on a tablet or a mobile device. If I've got to do some serious writing or any kind of serious work on a computer, I'm either on a laptop with a decent keyboard, or I'm on this thing back here, which is a real live, honest to God desktop.
And that makes perfect sense to me. I know that when I send various people emails during the night, it's hard to tell on my phone because you can hit the right key you want to hit, but you're always going to get that letter next to it. And that happens at least 4 times out of 5 in a sentence I'm typing. I'll hit at least 2 letters, which I inadvertently didn't mean to do. I've gotten a lot better at it, but I do find the virtual keyboards quite irritating.
Oh, well, it's just not wide enough.
Yeah, it doesn't fit your finger, so, I mean, yeah, there's that. And I know there's a video going around, and it's been, a lot of people have filed for it. It's a conceptual video more than anything else. But it's the new, supposed to be the iPhone 6 with a projector built into it. It looks like you can type. That's not real.
No.
In that video, that's a fraud. People are falling for it. It's just some artist's rendition of what they want to do. But that technology is, I guarantee you, years out to be able to do something like that. That was almost pushing Star Trek type things in my mindset, that the keyboard is a little white pad on your own table. It's not going to happen.
No, I don't think so.
At least not for the foreseeable future.
But I guess what I was told earlier may be the truth, that eventually people who insist on working on desktops will be migrated over to Windows Server.
I've heard that.
So
I really think in the end, it's really a ploy to control the consumer market in terms of knowing what you do and how you do it. The fact that, like you were saying earlier, now with Windows, there are no longer programs, it's the App Store, where you have to actually validate some sort of a payment card. They have all the information. I mean, therefore, they have your street address, your full name, everything down to your social security number, and then they can see what you bought in the past. So at some point, when they, and this is getting in conspiracy land, but I know it's probably going to happen, with this Windows platform, at some point, you're going to start getting advertising sent to you, just like the Internet used to do to you, based on what you bought in the past, and that's what you're going to see in your program windows. And in some of those buyers that come up and splash windows down.
Well, I've still got a ton of loading to do, and I've got to find a bunch of stuff, and I don't know where it is. It's deeply frustrating.
Well, I was going to say, if you got my email earlier, I sent you the preacher. He is at your desktop right
yes,
now.
Yes, I've got him. So we've at least got him, you know, going forward. Of course, I'll be in Washington, D.C. next Wednesday.
But that's basically all I had to say. I'm sorry to hear it's giving you fits, but it gets better. The emailer from before I write about
it. What Jay said, yeah, it gets better.
Exactly. It does get better after a while. It's frustrating at first. Trust me,
After I've been bullied by Microsoft for 20 years, it gets better.
Yeah,
Jeremy, have yourself a good evening.
You too, thanks, bud.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
From Vermont, that's our buddy Jeremy. It is about 26 minutes, and lo and behold, the computer's keeping good time. See, I knew. You have no idea why it was we had to eventually, me and that mouse in my pocket, you have no idea why it was that I had to finally bite the bullet and do this. The thing was just a mess. But it's still 17 shades of unpleasant. And there's more than, it's more than just, you know, some cranky 50-year-old carping about an operating system. It is, as Jeremy points out, it's got to do with, and as Andy pointed out in his email as well, it has to do with the way that the corporate world treats the people who buy their crap now. You don't like it? Too bad. It's all there is. It's become one big Hobson's choice. You can have the horse by the door or no horse at all. Right. Some choice. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, this is Edward.
Hey, Edward.
You shocked me. I got you so quickly. Anyway, I have a question for you. A friend of mine in North Carolina called me this afternoon, and the state legislature, or whatever they call themselves, have gone completely crazy, and they are even proposing that North Carolina have its own religion.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And also, they are saying that any of the federal laws or regulations, if they don't like them, they don't have to follow them. What is the term for that? I'm having a moment.
Edward, that is nullification.
Nullification. Thank you. Bless your heart. Nullification. Well, that's what they're trying to do. Oh, Lord, I'm ashamed anymore to tell anybody I'm from Texas or North Carolina. My goodness.
For a lot of us, it's getting that way. Imagine living in West Virginia.
Oh, me. Well, how about North Carolina having their own religion? I asked him, I said, what are they going to do, elect a pope? He didn't know.
Well, you know, it was our buddy Reverbo who used to talk about the possum goddess.
Well, they would have lots of those in North Carolina. I know, because I've seen them.
I'm told they're delicious with sweet taters.
Oh, dear. No, thank you. No, thank you. I'd eat a possum just as quick as I'd eat an armadillo. And I'm not about to do that.
And that's not right.
Mm. Oh, dear. Well, Rick Perry is showing his backside to the world, and
yeah. Wait. What is this? Explain this to me, Edward.
What's that?
North Korea wants to blow up Texas.
I don't know. He's probably going to nuke North Korea. Who knows? The man has problems.
Here's the quote, and try not to just devolve into gales of laughter, Edward. This is what Rick Perry and why any for-profit media outlet, let alone, well, CBS This Morning, interviewed him. I don't know if the booker for this program just
lives with a bottle of scotch under her pillow or what? CBS this morning actually contacted Rick Perry to get him on the program to talk about North Korea's threat to Texas.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah. So here's what he said.
Tell me what he said.
What I will suggest to you is that one of the reasons that Austin is put on the map, and by the map he means a map that North Korea has put out of places they'd like to target with nuclear weapons, and Austin is on it. What I will suggest to you is that one of the reasons that Austin is put on the map is that he put very important American cities on the map. Economically, what has happened in Texas over the course of the last decade has made this city an epicenter for a lot of technology and a lot of economic development. And I think the individuals in North Korea understand that Austin, Texas, is now a very important city in America, as do corporate CEOs and other people who are moving here in record number. Dadgum, I never thought I'd see the day when I thought George W. Bush turned out to be the smart one.
How about it? Well, they've got a lot of bluegrass singers there. Maybe he's after them.
Maybe he wants to nuke South by Southwest.
Well,
you know, SXSW.
The Johnson Library. That's there. Well, Austin does have a lot of industry there and a lot of brain power, but I don't think...
Well, Rick Perry ain't no brain power, Edward.
No, he's not. Absolutely not. He is like Jim Hightower said about Dan Quayle. He said Dan Quayle is so dumb, he thinks that Cheerios are... donut seed. John Hightower said that about it. And I think our one and only governor just fits into that shoe very comfortably. And it's not a glass slipper either, let me tell you.
I think Rick Perry just needs to lay off the hydrocodones for a while.
Oh, my. Well, I tell you, I don't know what's wrong with North Carolina. Yeah, they decided that if they don't agree with a law or a regulation of the United States of America, they are just not going to do it. So there.
Glory.
Yes, they're going to stomp their little foot and say, I ain't going to do it.
We've been down this road before.
Oh, I know. What a world.
Indeed.
Yeah, well, take care, and thank you. Like I said, I was having one of my senior moments. My friend in North Carolina was, too, and we couldn't think of the word nullification.
Well, it's there, and it is sure enough what that is.
Well, thank you so much, and you take care of yourself, and be careful in Washington, D.C. the next 3 weeks.
Well, I sure will. I sure will, Edward, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, well, I've been around Washington, D.C. years ago, so... You have to watch out.
Yes, you do. You take care, Edward. Have a good night.
You do, too.
Bye now. Edward calling from Dallas and raising a good point and something that I had wanted to get into anyway. And what with it being prayer meeting Wednesday and all. I love you. There, okay. I did it. I did the voice. Okay. It's now prayer meeting Wednesday. By now, you're bound to know the story. Out of North Carolina, a bill has been introduced in the North Carolina legislature, which is, of course, dominated by Repeglicans. And it allows... Why? What engendered this response? Okay, we got to go back to 2009. Forsyth County Board of Commissioners was found by a court of competent jurisdiction to have violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, you know, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or restricting the free practice thereof. That's pretty close, isn't it? I had all this stuff memorized once upon a time, but so the ACLU sued Forsyth County's Board of Commissioners because they were using sectarian prayers to open their official meetings. And one may safely surmise that Forsyth County, North Carolina, probably has some folks who aren't Christian in it. Might even have some folks who are Jewish in it. Might have some folks who are Muslim in it. Might have some atheists in it. And Magistrate Judge Trevor Sharp made a finding that the prayers opening up the Forsyth County Board of Commissioners, quote, display a preference for Christianity over other religions by the government, and that doing so alienates those whose beliefs differ from Christian beliefs and divides citizens along religious lines. That was 2009. Well, the good, upstanding, God-fearing members of the Republican Party who hold the majority in North Carolina have been head up about it ever since. And so they done introduced themselves a bill in the North Carolina legislature. The bill was introduced by Representatives Harry Warren and Carl Ford. It's called House Bill 494. Nine other House members have jumped in for the introduction of the bill. And the bill declares the sovereignty of the state of North Carolina, and that any ruling by a court on matters of religion is null and void because North Carolina is sovereign. And it's not because Forsyth County is just slapped down a rat hole. This case went all the way up to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the Fourth Circuit. And they didn't ban the prayers. They just said that prayers that favored one religion over another, for instance, dear Jesus, the one and only Savior of humanity, the only way we can get to heaven and know and understand that you is the only way we can get to heaven and not them heathen Buddhists, nor those Christ-killing Jews, nor them heathen Muslim infidel Islams, nor your Buddhists, nor your spirit worshipers. Oh, Jesus, thank you and pass your blessings upon this year meeting of the Forsyth County Board of Commissioners. Ha! That is the kind of prayer that is forbidden. A nice, generic, okay, to the extent a prayer can be nice. A nice generic prayer that says something like, oh, I don't know, bestow thy wisdom upon our naked heads or something. Yeah, that kind of crap. But it ain't good enough. It is not good enough to suit the fine, upstanding, God-fearing members of the Republican Party in the North Carolina legislature. And so they have declared, let me see if I got the, yeah, I think I do. Let me see if I got the body of the, yeah, here it is. I'll have it in a minute here. Oh, shit, it opened up a new tile.
HJR 494, entered April 1st, 2013. House Principal Clerk, no, this is not an April Fool's joke. Let's get reading. Whereas the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof. And whereas this prohibition does not apply to states, municipalities, or schools, that's line six. We're going to want to come back to line six. Whereas in recent times, the federal judiciary has incorporated states, municipalities, and schools into the Establishment Clause prohibitions on Congress. And whereas the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution reads, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And whereas the 10th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States prohibits the federal government and prohibits the federal courts from expanding the powers of the federal government beyond those powers which are explicitly enumerated. And whereas the Constitution of the United States does not grant the federal government and does not grant the federal courts the power to determine what is or is not constitutional, therefore, by virtue of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, the power to determine constitutionality and the proper interpretation and proper application of the Constitution is reserved unto the states and to the people. And whereas each state in the Union is sovereign and may independently determine how that state may make laws respecting an establishment of religion, and whereas Round County, North Carolina, or perhaps Rowan, asserts that the protections afforded to citizens of the new United States under the First Amendment are not in any way to be abridged when such citizens become government actors by virtue of their, because they only acting, they ain't doing it for real, of their appointment, election, contract, employment, or otherwise engagement. And whereas Rowan, Rowan County, North Carolina, requests and encourages the North Carolina General Assembly to pass a resolution declaring that the state of North Carolina does not recognize the authority of federal judicial opinions arising from the exertion of powers not granted to the federal government by the Constitution of the United States, now therefore, be it resolved by the House of Representatives, the Senate concurring, the North Carolina General Assembly asserts that the Constitution of the United States in America does not prohibit states or their subsidiaries from making laws respecting an establishment of religion. And Section 2, the North Carolina General Assembly does not recognize federal court rulings which prohibit and otherwise regulate the state of North Carolina, its public schools, or any political subdivisions of the state from making laws respecting an establishment of religion. You got all that? Yeah. What did I say about line six? Whereas the prohibition does not apply to states, municipalities, or schools. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Just because you don't like the 14th Amendment does not mean the 14th Amendment does not exist. Because, you see, up until that little dust-up that started in 1861... and up until the passage of the 13th and 14th Amendments, it was understood that the Bill of Rights did not, in fact, extend, of which the First Amendment is a part, did not extend to the states. That's another one of those drafting failures that very, very smart men who drafted the Constitution made. But as of the passage of the 13th and 14th Amendment, and particularly the 14th Amendment, the Bill of Rights, including the First Amendment, expressly is applied to the states, to municipalities, and to schools.
And that line in line, that remark in line 7, whereas in recent times the federal judiciary has incorporated states, municipalities, and schools into the Establishment Clause prohibitions on Congress. You know, recently. Recent times. Like 1867. I'm telling you, the Civil War was just yesterday. In places like North Carolina. This is, as Edward noted, in fact, a rank and disgusting manifestation of nullification. Jim, noting via email, the 14th Amendment exists and is the law of the land, period. Jim, if you wish, and I'm not being a smartass here, you are welcome to go down to North Carolina and explain that to the Republican members of the North Carolina legislature and see how far your explanation gets you. Now, I don't want to start hollering into the microphone because there's no point to it. We don't need to holler at each other. But great googly moogly. What more does it take? Because I've been talking about this a right smart bit lately. What more does it take before people understand and start spreading the word that we are in the middle of, not on the verge of starting, or at the tail end of, we are smack dab in the middle of a cold civil war. Just like what happened between 1946 and the fall of the Soviet Union was known as the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, we are in the midst of a cold civil war in the United States of America. The Confederacy, such as it was, grudgingly admitted defeat. Or I should say grudgingly surrendered, but never admitted defeat. It must be understood that what we're dealing with here, as enacted by the North, as proposed by these 11 members of the House of Representatives of the state of North Carolina, is an act of treason. That bill is treasonous. Because if you say that you will not act according to the Constitution of the United States and the settled law interpreting it, you are engaged at that point in time in a state of hostility with the United States of America. Nullification, arguments of nullification, are treasonous. I don't throw that word around as a matter of course or happenstance. People listening to this program and observing this country from outside its borders need to understand that this country is on the verge of tearing itself apart in a cold civil war. Outside isolated incidents in which pillheads, blow-away sheriffs, or pissed-off fascist right-wingers pissed off fascist white wingers, blow away prosecutors, there's not going to be any gunplay in a cold civil war. This is something to which the South and the Republican Party have been building up for more than a generation. They are hateful, they are bigoted, but they are not stupid. And that's why we spent 20 or 30 years hearing them complain about activist judges legislating from the bench. Because ultimately, they knew they would win this cold civil war from the bench. And now, they have just the Supreme Court to do it. You want to put down a fin on how Fat Tony Scalia would rule on this? Or Slappy Thomas? Or Alito? Or Kennedy? Or Dead-Eyed John Roberts? Because right there is the 5 votes you need. I mean, this is not the sharpest legal reasoning I've ever run across to argue that the 10th Amendment trumps the First. The 10th Amendment proves that the First, that the 14th is not applicable, even though it's been. See, this goes all the way to the grounds of government. That's what nullification does. This assaults the principle set forth in Marbury versus Madison that says that the Supreme Court shall be the final arbiter of what the Constitution means in the United States of America. This is a salvo in a cold civil war. And whether the nullification has to do with firearms or abortion or immigration or religion, or any other thing. The purpose of it is to finally get a win. Because all they have to do is win on one nullification issue and everything falls apart. These neo-Confederates do not, we must understand all the way down to our toenails, do not wish to any longer be a part of the Union. Do not wish to be a part any longer of the United States of America, except to the extent that the United States of America agrees to write them checks that won't bounce and demand nothing in return. You're going to see it more and more and more. And eventually, if you throw enough bubble gum at the wall, one wad is going to stick. And that's all it takes, is one. The longer we persist in failing to comprehend that we are in the midst of a cold civil war, the more likely it is that one of these will stick. I remember Isaac calling in a couple of weeks ago talking about how screwed up North Carolina can be. You wonder what, and Ron and Raleigh, just before showtime. With another observation. Asking, may I offer up an imprecatory prayer? Why, yes, Ron, yes. I recently sent an email
Ron says, in which I indicated that one should keep an eye on North Carolina. The latest outrage from our newly minted Ulrich-Piglian legislature is criminal background checks for all seeking state or federal food assistance, not office. The reasoning is that it will protect the integrity of the program. I imagine this is the same sort of protection that photo IDs give the voting process. I've said in the past that Republicans have found that sweet spot in the American psyche of selfishness, venality, mendacity, and just plain meanness. We are just 3 months and a couple of days into the new legislature, and these swine are running the complete ALEC playbook. The difference between the national news and that other states received when this took place in Wisconsin or Michigan is that here in North Carolina, we're used to powers, the powers that be, crapping all over the poor. Once again, keep your eye on North Carolina. The bad news is just starting up. Next, fracking and deep well injections of wastewater. May their days be short. May the teeth break off in their heads. Yada, 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 says Ron in Raleigh. Amen, Brother Ron. Amen. But there is nothing new in any of this. Not a damn bit of it. It is only because we weren't around for the last time this little dog and pony show came to town that anybody thinks it is. And I'm not seeing anybody refer to this as a cold civil war except me. And I don't, just as with treason, I don't use the term lightly. So give it some thought. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But if I'm right, as Hunter Thompson said, the hogs are in the tunnel and they will travel on a road of bones. I'm awful tickled we were able to get to the air tonight. We were able to engage in our little nightly conversation. I'll try to make it better, try to get some stuff working, a little more stuff working by tomorrow. Thank you for everything you do, including keeping this on the air. This has been a slow evening with only one contribution coming in. And it makes, and every night we have one of these nights makes it a little less likely that there will be a next month. And it's going to get extra hard because I've got to be in D.C. because the only people doing this work right now are my buddy Bo, my colleague Bo, and me. And I'm not going to leave Bo to shoulder the load alone. There will be shows from D.C. But nights like this, when no support comes in, make it very hard to say that there will be a horn in May. And I hate to even say that. But thanks to all of you for your time, your contributions, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room. Thank you, because your finite time is the most valuable thing that you share. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, who tells me she's playing hooky to listen to her first Yankees game of the year in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Keep getting well, Susan. Thanks to John Fox for all the help last night and continuing into tonight. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Rick Smith is next.